Hello, everyone. Welcome to the B2B Marketing Podcast. My name is David Rowlands. I'm the head of content at B2B Marketing and Propolis, which is the global community for B2B marketers. I'm joined today by Benoit Soucouré, who is the chief experience officer at Merkle EMEA. So, Benoit, welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
No worries, anytime. So we're going to talk about your new report, B2B Futures, and some of the findings within that. But before we do, I just thought it would be interesting to, you know, learn a little bit about you and your background and how you got to where you are today in Merkle, if that's okay.
Sure. Yeah, of course. So I studied to work in advertising, in traditional advertising, and then something like 20 odd years ago. And the first job that I was getting were had to do with digital commerce or just digital in general, when digital was not what it is today. So, you know, UX was still called information architectures and stuff like that. And I ended up sort of falling into digital by default, almost as a was a mistake. And then I ended up staying in this world, and it's been almost 20 years that I've been working in a digital space. I worked agency side, client side. I worked for all sorts of organizations for very small startups with 5 to 6 people. And then now, you know, being part of Merkle, Dentsu, which is a global organization with many people, many offices around the world. And my career sort of went through that. So I started as a designer. So my background is very much the craft of design, and then it evolved into interaction design, experience design. And so this is sort of where I got to as a chief experience officer for Merkle today.
Fantastic. Well, that's a really interesting background. I mean, quite often the people we speak to either started in sales or, you know, in marketing, obviously, mm-hmm. but design, mm-hmm. you really have that creative background. Do you think that's right. That's kind of put you in good stead for your career as a CXO?
I think so. I think it's my interpretation. I'm sure, because CXO is also, it's a new role. It's a newish title, right? And I think before 2010, it didn't exist. And so I imagine companies have slightly different definition of what a CXO should be. I think it's about the CXO role is a lot of it is about the craft of design, the craft of experience design. And a big part of my job basically is to make sure that customers love the brands we're working with, right? So my job now is to sort of come up with plans that make sure customers have a great time every step of the way with the different brands that they interacted with. And so this background in creativity and design, I think is key, right? It's really about how do you use data, design and in a creative way at the intersection of technology and business to sort of create or give them top-notch reliable stuff every time they interact with the brand, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, you know, Merkle has recently released this report that I mentioned at the beginning called B2B Futures, The View from mm-hmm. 2030. And this report assesses academic and cultural signals, looks at both proprietary and public data sources and uses interviews with internal external right. experts. So it's a really comprehensive view. And it's all about forecasting what the world might look like for B2B industries in 6 years' time. So we'll mm-hmm. get to the findings shortly, but what encouraged you to create and publish this report in the first place?
Right. I think, I mean, the put it this way, the first thing is we were super curious about where the whole B2B scene was headed. Like, you know, businesses buying from each other is a huge deal, right? So, and it sort of keeps the wheels turning in the economy, and it's always changing, right? And so we really wanted to share essentially our 2 cents on what we consider what's new, and most importantly, what's next, right? And how businesses can sort of stay ahead of the game. And plus we figured out it might help other folks or clients make sense of it all and maybe sort of get a leg up in their own game. So I think this was important to us. The other thing, I suppose, is, you know, if you look at successful B2B brands today, they're really starting to take a position of I would say deep relevance in business culture, that they understand how business culture is evolving and how the needs of B2B buyers and their companies are changing with it. And so almost as a result, that they are constantly evolving their brand experience at speed and at scale, right, in order to stay relevant. And we thought this was a really interesting space to dive into.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And before looking forward to 2030, which is actually worryingly close now, it sounds far away, but I
Please.
guess it's really not. But before we look that far ahead, the report outlines five areas that you think marketers should really focus on if they want to differentiate themselves today. So could you tell us what these five areas are and why you feel they're so important?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm Merkle. I don't know if you know that, but we have a really strong B2B market research team. It's called B2B International. Part of our Merkle B2B division and Dentsu Business. And we've been tracking the this sort of ever-evolving shape of business culture and the sort of diverse subculture since, I think it's been 4 years since 2019. And we have this yearly comprehensive B2B research survey, which is called the Superpower Index. And what we see though is it's like most businesses, it's a game of inches, right? And we've identified five areas which are those inches, or otherwise you call them success factors. And it's so the first thing it's really safety signing a contract, right? So the overall importance of this attribute has massively increased steadily from 2020. And it has it to the point where it's now number one. It's the number one most important factor in it influences brand success, right? So this sort of safety in signing a contract. There's also brands importance of brands complying with regulations, right? So with laws and standards, that's obvious. But along that, there's a brand that aligns with my personal values and ethics. So it's not just in B2C; it's all very much present in B2B, and they need to be approachable and transparent. And then the fifth one is really trying to provide expertise and support, right? So as we have businesses that are sort of forced to become leaner and work more closely with their suppliers and partners, we're really starting to see an increased interest in the expertise and support which you can have, you know, suppliers offering alongside their main offering. So these have really become significantly more important to winning outcome this year versus last year, definitely.
Sure. When you say safety signing a contract, what do you mean by that exactly?
It's you know making sure that there's transparency, that there's nothing hidden, that there's real that the contract is made so that it's easy to understand, that there's no gray area within the contract. It's more in that sense.
I see. Okay. So looking forward to 2030, then, you've identified four seismic shifts that you expect to see, which are machine-to-machine commerce, the traceability imperative, marketplace model dominance, and a new era of speed to market. So starting with that first one, machine-to-machine commerce, what exactly do you mean by this, and why do you think it's going to be so prevalent in a few years' time?
Yeah, so it's this is one of my favorite ones. So basically, what the research shows is that a huge part of business-to-business sales will be done by machines talking to each other, right? And so, in the analogy is to say, imagine if your next customer is not a person but a machine with its own wallet, and that's kind of what we mean. And the breakdown of this statement is to say, is essentially, and that's what the research shows, is simpler sales already being automated, right? So thanks to technology like AI or blockchain, we have things that used to need a human touch and that can now be done entirely by machines. You have machines that are getting smarter, right? So with so many devices connected to the internet and to each other, what we call IoT or Internet of Things, you have machines that can now collect and share data on their own, right? And so this means that they can handle tasks like managing inventory or ordering supplies without the need of a human to tell them what to do. That's already, you have things like pre-order or order again on website, and those are things that are already being done. And then the last thing is, which I think is also important, is everyone's getting used to machine help, right? So just like we're used to asking Siri or Alexa for help at home, businesses are starting to prefer dealing with machines for their needs. And so as a result, they expect a smooth experience similar to what they can get with regular customers, right? And so what's on the horizon for us is, one, we're going to start seeing, and the data that we show in the report, in the B2B futures report, shows that it's supply chains will be on autopilot, right? So by 2026, so it's not far, we expect that 65% of decision about what to stock and when will be made by machine. And that's thanks to visibility provided by things like IoT. The other thing is smart shopping for businesses, right? So companies are already they're using data to figure out when someone might be ready to buy. And that makes it easier to reach out to at just the right moment, right? And by 2030, we think, again, the research, because of our research, we think that businesses will let AI do their shopping. They'll let AI do their negotiation deals with other machines. And this means that we're going to see big changes for how things like loyalty and shopping experience are designed, which is really interesting, right? And more, we're going to have businesses that are comfortable making large purchases digitally without the need to meet in person. And we're already seeing that businesses are already feeling much more comfortable. People, procurement leaders that are Gen Z or younger millennial are already really comfortable making big purchase or big ticket item order without the need of a real life interaction. And then one thing that's important, which I think AI will play a key role as well, is self-service. So self-service option are not just convenient for B2B buyers, but they can also open up new markets, right? And they can help you build direct relationship with customers. And in results, which is one of the key pain point of B2B, leading to faster sales and more repeat business, right? Because the sales cycles for B2B is quite long. And then lastly, I think it will help machine-to-machine commerce will help make complex purchases easier. And that's because by improving the online buying experience and making pricing clearer, that's how you can help businesses feel more comfortable making big purchases on their own, right? So in short, I would say the world of B2B, or B2B sales specifically is changing, and it's changing fast. And I think machine take on more of the work and make things easier for everyone involved. And so this is why we're really positive about this prediction that a third of purchases by 2030 will be done by machine to machine.
That's really interesting. I mean, I guess my immediate follow-up question to that is, what impact does that have on marketers? Because a lot of what we do as marketers is creating content and creating creative that appeals to humans. But I would imagine that what's going to appeal to, me sitting on my phone at home is not necessarily going to be the same thing that appeals to, an AI bot. So
Right.
is this a danger sign for marketers, do you think?
I don't think so. And I see it more as an opportunity. I'm from my perspective, for example, creativity, I see it as an opportunity, right? And I think we're definitely at a sort of turning point for marketeers and creative. And when you have new technologies like AI, Gen AI, or lots of data, I think companies are expected to be really sharp and careful with every move they make, right? Even when they're trying to be daring. And so I think we as marketeers and creative have to sort of develop almost like a happy relationship with AI in order to really amplify human capabilities. So I wouldn't necessarily see it as something that would always as always, sort of take other people's job. It's more a tool that will, from my perspective, help you amplify your own capabilities, right? And And we're going to see AI becoming a huge part of creativity. We're going to your point, we're going to see it becoming a huge part of content creation. It already is. We've just seen ChatGPT launching Sora, which is an unbelievable text-to-image plugin. And so I see it I see those technologies as a tool that will make us better at our job, make things more efficient too, that's for sure. But I think from a customer and workers point of view, I think generally speaking, this will make things a lot easier for us, whether it's from commerce, marketing, sales. I think it'll just help amplify the work that we do. And one last thing, I think, we often talk about one-to-one personalization at scale and how it's key for brand. The reality is a lot of big brands today often struggle to give customers something that's just right for them, simply because they're just not set up for it. And I think that new technologies like AI, Gen AI will can really make doing that a lot easier.
Yeah, no, sure thing. I mean, so obviously there's four seismic shifts that you've mentioned. So that's the first one. The second one was the traceability imperative. So what does that mean exactly? And again, why do you think it's so important?
So basically, by 2030, and the B2B futures is really looking at shift in the B2B space by 2030. And so by 2030, we're seeing we are predicting rather that knowing a product's backstory, if you will become super important for businesses. For businesses buying from other businesses. And so right now, the price tag is what everyone looks at, but we really think that soon it's going to be all about traceability. And this means businesses, sorry, will want to know, one, where the product was made, if the area it's made in is stable, if the workers are being paid fairly, and if the way it's made is good for the environment. And lastly, if the whole sort of process that they're going through is on the sort of up and up, ethically speaking, right? And so businesses are going to have to care so much more about this stuff that they'll pay extra for it. We really think so. And so first of all, we need to contextualize traceability. And so when we talk about traceability, it's like a almost like the analogy that I use is it's a product's life story, from the very start, where the raw materials come from, to every step of his journey until he ends into the buyer's hand. And this is tough because products tend to, as we know, travel all over the world, and there's a lot, to keep track of. But what we're seeing from the research is that buyers are saying, we need to know. They're not just buying something, they're buying the whole story that goes with it, how it's made, and really the impact it has on people and the planet, right? So we really have we're seeing businesses, B2B businesses, really pushing for this clear info, and they want to make products on a reliable schedule, right? Make sure they're made in a way that's good for the planet, and tell their customer, hey, we take care of our workers, and this way they can ask for better prices. And this is why I think brands will be willing to pay maybe a bit more for that transparency. And looking forward in the future, I think businesses will choose to buy. I think they choose who to buy from based on who's doing, the best for the world and their worker, and who's being honest about what's in their product and how it's made. And it's really about being a good partner in business and doing the right thing. So that's really the main thing. The other thing is why this is happening. Why is traceability all of a sudden, or at least what the research shows, will become one of the main, key decision driver. But one, there was the pandemic, as we know. So COVID-19 shook everything up. And I think it obviously made everyone realize how tricky it is when you can't see how your product is being made. Plus, there's a lot to, there's a lot of talk about businesses needing to be socially responsible. Politics is playing a role too. There's a bunch of new rules coming up about making things in a way that's better for the environment. And businesses need to be able to show that they're keeping up, right? They have, it's a must now. And then finally, you know, for a long time, you know, figuring out a product's life story was really hard. But now, again, thanks to new technology like tiny chip tracking devices, or like I said earlier, the Internet of Things and blockchain, it's becoming, I think it's more possible to really see where everything comes from. So, for example, there's an example that we use in a report, like Walmart. Walmart used new tech to track down where the mangoes come from in seconds, not days, which is pretty incredible, right? So the way businesses buy and sell is changing, and that's what we're highlighting in the report. And really being open and honest about your product is really becoming a big deal, and will become more so in, you know, by the time we get to 2030.
Yeah, no, I can absolutely imagine. I mean, I can see the it's easy to kind of find those connections when you're talking about a product, you know, when you're talking about an actual physical thing. But do you think the same thinking applies when you're talking about a service?
It's a good question. I think it's trickier. I mean, I think so. I think it is. First of all, we're in the experience economy, right? And in order to be successful in the experience economy, you know, you have to understand that you're in the service business, meaning that even if you're selling products, you're in a service business. And so it's not, you're no longer just selling a product, you're selling what I call the augmented product, which is not just the tangible, the tangible aspect of a product and of your brand, which is the product that people can have in their hand, but you're also selling the services that go with the product, the more intangible aspect of the product. And that's what I call augmented product. And all this goes hand in hand. And the way you have to approach the design of that service around the product that you sell has to be as holistic as possible, right? So we often at Merkle tend to talk about the front stage experience and the backstage experience, and how, you know, you cannot deliver a top-notch customer buyer experience without putting your house in order in the backstage. So I think that the short answer is yes. I think it's as important for services as it is for product. It may not be as easily trackable, but it's definitely something that is it is a big deal. Whether it's product or services, it is a big deal.
Yeah, and I think I would agree, but I had to ask.
Yeah.
So the third seismic shift, marketplace model dominance. Again, you know, what is meant by this, and why do you think that it's going to be so prevalent?
Yes. Right. So we dove into a bunch of data about B2B e-commerce and online marketplaces, looking all the way up to 2030 again. And turns out there isn't a lot of information out there when it comes to marketplace sales, but we took a crack at sort of designing what the global B2B online sales might look like by 2030, and especially, like you said, the part played by marketplaces. And it's, look, I'll be honest, it's a bit of a guessing game, since everyone from research group to investment firms seems to have a different take. But our work, if you will, like I'll give you the scoop of our work, is that by 2030, and again, this is all in the report, but we believe that all the businesses buying and selling online could be worth somewhere between 26 and 33 trillion dollars. That's a growth rate that's about, you know, a little over 19% every year. And so if we just look at 2022, and we take into account the multiple reports that we've looked at, and doubling what the size of things like the US market, you know, to guess the world's total, marketplaces might have sold around, I think it was 320 or $330 billion worth of good, right? So if things grow steadily at 30% each year, I think we can see those marketplaces making 10% of that total 30 trillion in online B2B sales by 2030, right? So for the folks selling stuff, these marketplaces are a gold mine. And that's our belief, right? They're like huge online malls, right? Where you have manufacturers and you have distributors that can sell bulk quantities of their industrial quality goods directly to other businesses. And we've helped clients in various industries set up their own marketplaces, and they've seen incredible result. And those marketplaces come with perks, right? So, for example, it's a single place to sell all your stuff. You have access to buyers who mean business for you. You're cutting out the middlemen, so and therefore boost profits. And that's the what I just mentioned about some of our clients. The catalogs that show up products by location or industry, it's something incredibly useful. And also, they usually have all the technical and safety details that go with it, which may be harder to find. From an experience standpoint, we have incredible teams of designers that can now make those interfaces a lot more user-friendly. It's not the sort of what you have in mind of what the B2B digital experience used to be like. It's a lot closer to what B2C is today. You also have things like handy features for managing bids and sample requests. I mean, all the bells and whistles of big time e-commerce and customer management system, you have it in marketplaces. And for buyers, really those marketplaces become treasure trove because they can shop around on those marketplaces. They can buy from various certified sellers in just one spot. And so for them, the benefits are, it's like a buffet of supplies and prices. It's like a giant catalog stuffed with, specialty and commercial grade goods. It's smart tools, it's data that can help you with your buying decision. It's also a much small much smoother, sorry, process for buying stuff. I guess it's that. It's a digital first space, right? Where you can sort of track the whole buying process from start to finish. And that's something that you don't really get anywhere else than in marketplaces. And this is why we've in the report we highlight three big trends, right? One, marketplaces are opening doors for less obvious B2B niches. B2B buyers want more choices and better reliability, which is a massive plus of marketplaces. And then also as a business owner, having your own marketplace is a super smart move if you want to grow your business. And get this, since 2019, the number of niche B2B marketplaces has tripled, right? So if you look at the US back then, we had, I think, barely 100 of these sort of specialized B2B marketplaces. Now we have over 400 in the US and 250 in Europe. So we all know about the sort of like giant one-stop shop like Amazon B2B and Alibaba. And we have data in a report that sort of shows how their sales have exploded. But yeah, I think it's a huge advantage for business owners, for B2B businesses, but also for buyers, right? So a big focus on that for us by 2030.
Yeah, some incredible stats there as well. We've only got a couple of minutes left of our
Yes.
time today, so I just want to quickly go through that final shift, which is a new era of speed to market. From my point of view, speed to market has always been important. So why is that going to accelerate, do you think, in a few years?
So we go back. That's a super interesting one. And you're right in saying that speed to market has always been interesting. But because of those new technologies like artificial intelligence, like machine learning and IoTs, by the time we hit 2030, we're looking at things moving up to 3 times faster than when it comes to getting new product out there today. So basically, we're stepping into a future where we can make and do things. Where how we make and do things is about to get almost like a massive makeover, if you will. And that's, again, that's thanks to like cool technologies like AI, and there's also like breakthrough in bioengineering and things like that. But what we mean by speed to market, sorry, it's a way of saying how quickly an idea becomes something real, and that you can buy, right? And so we're talking about speeding up a whole process, as in dreaming it up, designing it, making it, testing it, you know, getting bigger and delivering it. And that's about to get a lot faster. And we have, for each, I forgot to say earlier, for each shift, we have three forces. And for this one, we've got our eyes on three big game changer. First, it's like I say, it's AI kicking things into really high gear. You know, it's really ditching the sort of slow, boring stuff, and almost like blasting through a ton of data to make sure that when we make something, we do it right the first time. So that's a massive plus. It's even starting to guess if a product will be a hit or a miss before we make a whole bunch of them. So that's another thing about potentially saving a boatload of cash. Then AI is making the hunt for new materials for you and chemicals way faster than the old sort of try and error way. So there's lots of things like that. The second force is we've got advanced manufacturing that's making prototyping cheap and fast. So think, you know, 3D printing, right? And it's been talked about for a long time. Well, think 3D printing on steroids, right? So you're zapping together everything from metal to resin, for example. And before we even start making things for real, we can run simulation to sort of squash any bugs ahead of time. There was an example in Amsterdam. They've created a bridge, and they build a digital twin of that bridge to test how the bridge would function, you know, the materials, how it would age, et cetera, right? So it's incredible what you can do now. And then last but not least, we've got this whole world of smart computing that's always on 24/7. Like I said, digital twins and the Internet of Things. And so this technology is all about making sure everything runs smoothly, adding to the sort of speed to market. So from the machine making stuff to the services keeping them going, this is all AI will help doing that. So for example, one of our examples in the report, GE, so General Electric, is using this technology, this new technology, you know, digital twin and Internet of Things, to design and manage wind farms that, get this, that performs 20% better thanks to those digital twins, right? So that's, again, that's another incredible sort of finding in a report. And by 2030, the way we bring all kind of new things into the world is going to be way, way faster and way smarter. And so yeah, I feel it feels like we're putting everything on fast forward thanks to that.
Yeah. Well, Benoit, thank you very much for your time today. And before anyone goes, I just want to say that we'll leave a link to the report in the description as well. So we've touched upon some of the main themes today, but obviously, if you want all the detail, please do read that. Benoit, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Bye.